Unfortunately, he did have time. So he listened as Mr. Tsung went on telling him the long and involved fairy tale. Suddenly, about halfway through it, Johnny abruptly sat up and said to the coordinator, "I thought so. Please, send for Sir Robert." It startled Mr. Tsung, and Johnny said, "Thank you. Very good story. Thank you more than you know." As Lord Johnny seemed pleased and things were a bit rushed, Mr. Tsung happily went out to make sure the silk suit was altered correctly. Johnny looked around to see whether there were any button cameras in the place. He couldn't really tell. He didn't think so, but he would be very brief and cryptic to play it on the safe side. A couple minutes later, Sir Robert came in. He, too, had been grooming himself. He was wearing a cloak with the Royal Stuart colors, a matching kilt, and Scottish white spats. The wool was made of shining hairs. He was the complete Scottish soldier and lord, excepting only weapons. Johnny had never seen him dressed in full regimentals before. Quite impressive, but the old man looked a bit hollow-eyed and worried. "This is going to be a tough one," said Johnny. "Aye, lad. Did ye ken that tall nip? I be no diplomat, laddie, and there's nae chance of bringing Fergus out. The danger lies in antagonizing them lords and states that isna involved as yet. A false step, and we'll be adding them to the enemy." He was upset, even talking in dialect. Johnny never thought he'd have to soothe Sir Robert. "We have a chance, a good one. Now, here's what I propose we do. You go in there by yourself and do all you can." Sir Robert didn't much care for that, but he listened. "And then, when you have finished or think you have gone as far as possible, you call me in. Introduce me however you please, but not too specifically. The communicator they've been using as host will do out the introductions," said Sir Robert. "Well, tell him what I said, all right?" "Very good, laddie. I'll do whatever I can. And if I havena a ceasefire, I'll call ye." The old war chief turned to leave. "Good luck," said Johnny. "Aye, lad. That's exactly what I'll be needin'. We're nae a-doin' weel at a' in the field." Johnny looked at his watch. It wouldn't be long now. Chief Chong Wan popped in, grinning.
"The hole in the dam has stopped all but a trickle. My men are replacing the armor cable, patching and replacing it. The lake will be armored again before nightfall."
He threw his arms up, simulating the earlier explosion Johnny had made.
"Boom!"
he said, and vanished. Johnny thought, "Boom indeed. We'll all go boom if this conference fails." 7. Sir Robert had not been in the conference room 3 minutes before he realized that he was fighting the most difficult duel of his life. And he was in no shape for it. He had hardly slept at all since their return, and he recognized now that this was a huge error. For all his nickname, the Fox, he felt sluggish mentally. That nickname had been earned in physical combat and not in a conference room. Had this been a matter of troop dispositions and tactics, he could have coped with it. He would have laid an ambush for this Tallnap and transfixed him with arrows and hacked him to pieces with Lochaber axes. But there stood the Tallnap, elegant, poised, and deadly, already pressing Sir Robert back toward defeat. Sir Robert's morale was very bad. Half the anti-aircraft cover of Edinburgh had been wiped out by a desperate charge of Tallnap Marines. Russia was not answering at all, and his own wife was unreported after a cave-in of passages to the bunkers. It was desperate that he get a ceasefire. Yet this Tallnap was dithering around, posing, fiddling with his scepter, flattering the emissaries, and acting like he had all the time in the world. His name was Lord Slime. He had a tittering laugh that alternated with insidious acid hisses. He was a master of debate, much like a swordsman became a master of his blade.
"And so, my worthy colleagues," the Tallnap was saying now, "I really have not the faintest idea why this assemblage was convened at all. Your own time, your physical comfort, even the dignity of your august persons,
representing as you do the most powerful lords of the universes, should not have been assaulted and insulted by an upstart lot of barbarians involved in a petty local dispute. This is a purely local affair, a minor spat. It involves no treaties, and so your presence was well known to be unneeded by this weak band of outlaws and rebels who seek to call themselves a government. I propose that we simply dismiss this gathering and leave it up to the military commanders.
The august body stirred, bored. And they were an august body. Jewels glittered on the breathing masks of some. Brilliant cloth rippled as they moved. Some even wore crowns as tokens of the sovereign power they represented. 29 arbiters of the fates of 16 universes, they were quite conscious of their power. They felt that if they so chose, they could flick this small and unimportant planet into eternity with no more than a careless gesture of a claw or fingertip. They were not really paying too much attention to Lord Schleim, but tittering and whispering to one another, possibly about trivial scandals that had occurred since last they saw one another. They were evidence, physically, of what happens when different genetic lines, moving up from different roots, became sentient. Off to the side sat the small gray man, another man, quite similar to himself, but with a better quality gray suit, had arrived. They were quietly watching Sir Robert. It was very plain they were not going to intervene or help further. Sir Robert loathed courtiers, weak and corrupt and dangerous. That had always been his opinion of this breed. His contempt, he counseled himself, must not show. "Shall we get on with this meeting?" he said. The emissaries stirred. They muttered responses. "Yes, let's complete the formalities. Must have come for something or other. Let's get it over and done with. I've a birthday party waiting for my pet lizard," a remark followed by laughter. They had all shown their credentials earlier, and these had been acknowledged by the group, all but Sir Robert's. Lord Schleim had seated himself off to the side, in front, where he could appear to be addressing them all as their leader.
"We have not actually examined the credentials of this soldier who called this meeting," he offered. "I move that he be removed as the principal speaker, that I be appointed in his stead."
Sir Robert offered them the disc. It was played. It was in Gaelic, a tongue they didn't know. And he might have been called ineligible to conduct the meeting, had he not looked beseechingly at the small gray man, and if one of the disinterested members had not asked the small gray man whether he had accepted these credentials. The small gray man nodded. Bored, the rest of them accepted the credentials. That one had been touch and go for Sir Robert, for just prior to his entrance he had gotten word that the chief of Clan Fergus had been wounded in repelling an attack on the guns, and he did not know whether he could get a confirmation from Edinburgh.
"I fear," said Lord Schleim, "that I must raise another critical point. How can we be sure that this upstart planet can afford even the small costs of convening such a meeting as this? Your lordships surely would not want to remain unpaid and have to bear such expenses yourselves. They guaranteed the diplomatic costs, but we have no way of knowing that they will ever pay them. A scrap of paper saying that one is owed does not fit well in the pocket."
The emissaries laughed at the joke, poor as it was. "We can pay," glowered Sir Robert.
"With scraps of dirty plates?"
said Lord Schleim. The emissaries laughed some more. "With galactic credits," snapped Sir Robert.
"Taken, no doubt," said Lord Schleim, "from the pockets of our crewmen. Well, never mind. Your august lords have a perfect right to declare that the meeting should proceed. But I myself feel it is demeaning for the representatives of such mighty and powerful sovereigns to meet just to determine the conditions of surrender and capitulation of some felons."
"Stop!" bellowed Sir Robert. He had had enough. "We are not here to discuss our surrender. Also, there are other planets than your own involved, and we have not heard from them."
"Ah,"
said Lord Slime, with a leisurely, airy rotation of his scepter.
But my planet has the most ships here. 2 for every 1 the other planets have. And the senior officer of this combined police force happens to be a Tallnep, Quarter Admiral Snowleater.
Is dead, roared Sir Robert. His flagship, the Catcher, is lying right out there in the lake. Your Admiral and that entire crew are carrying.
Oh, so? Said Lord Slime. It had slipped my mind. These accidents happen. Space travel is a perilous venture at best. Probably ran out of fuel. But it doesn't alter what I have just said at all. Captain Rogo-Dieter Snowl is the senior officer, then. He has just been promoted. So, it remains that the senior commander and the greatest number of ships are Tallnep, which leaves me in the position of principal negotiator for the surrender of your people and planet after their unprovoked attack on us.
We are not losing, stormed Sir Robert. Lord Slime shrugged. He cast a negligent glance over the assemblage, as though pleading with them to have patience with this barbarian, and drawled,
Would the assemblage give me leave to confirm certain points?
Yes, of course, they muttered. Reasonable request. Lord Slime's head bent over the round ball atop his scepter, and with a shock Sir Robert realized it was a disguised radio, and that he had been in communication with his forces all along.
Ah, said Lord Slime as he raised his head, showed his fangs in a smile, and fixed his glass-hooded eyes on Sir Robert. 18 of your major cities are in flames.
So that was why they were burning deserted cities, to make an appearance of winning, just to terrorize and have a bargaining position in any surrender talks. Sir Robert was about to tell him those were just deserted ruins that hadn't been lived in for a millennium, but Lord Slime was pressing on.
This august assembly needs proof. Please have this trace run off.
He pulled a tiny thread from the base of the radio, a trace copy of the type they received from drones. I will not do it, said Sir Robert. The assemblage looked a little shocked. It began to dawn on them that maybe this planet's forces were losing.
Suppression of evidence, laughed Lord Slime, is a crime punishable by this body by fines. I suggest you mend your attitude. Of course, if you have no modern equipment.
Sir Robert sent the trace out to a resolver. They waited, and presently a stack of pictures came back. They were spectacular air views in full color of 25 burning cities. The flames were roaring thousands of feet into the air, and if you passed a finger down the right border, the sound turned on. The sound of rushing flames and crashing buildings cut through with a howl of furnace winds. Each picture had been taken at a height best showing the conflagration, and the resulting effect was devastating. Lord Slime passed them around. Paws and jeweled hands and inquisitive feelers made them roar.
We offer, said Lord Slime, very liberal terms. I am quite sure I will be rebuked by a motion of our House of Plunder for being so liberal. But my feelings of pity prompt me, and my word here is, of course, binding upon my government. The terms are that all your population be sold into slavery to meet the indemnities that occurred when Earth brought on this unprovoked war. I can even guarantee that they will be well treated. Over 50% survive such transportation on the average. Other belligerents, the Hovens, Jambit Chows, Bulbogs, Drawkins, and Cairns, to divide up the rest of the planet to meet the expenses incurred in defending themselves against this unprovoked attack upon their peaceful ships. Your king can go into exile on Tallnep and even be provided with a spacious dungeon. Good, fair terms. Too liberal, but my feelings of compassion prompt them.
The other emissaries shrugged. It was obvious, it seemed to them, that they had been called here just to witness some surrender terms in a petty war. Sir Robert was thinking fast, trying to see a way out of this trap. At the start of the meeting, He thought he had heard the hum of the transshipment rig 2 or 3 times. He could not be sure. He could not count on anything right now. He was tired. His king was wounded. His wife might be dead. All he could really think of was leaping on this horrible creature and taking his chances with those poisoned fangs. But he knew such an action before these emissaries would be fatal to their last glimmering chances. Seeing his indecision, Lord Slime said with a harsh, acid hiss,
"You earthlings realize that these mighty lords can make an agreement to force your capitulation? I believe the other combatants of the combined police force agree to my terms."
The representatives of the Hawvens, Jambit Chows, Bulbauds, Drawkins, and Cairns all nodded and said, one after the other, that they certainly agreed to these liberal terms. The rest of the assembly was just watching, a local dispute. But they could swing over and support the Tallneps if it meant ending this useless consumption of their time.
"I came," said Sir Robert, "to discuss your surrender. But before we go any further with this, I shall have to call in my fully authorized colleague."
He made a signal in the direction of where he knew the button camera was and sat down. He was tired. The slowness and delay of these deliberations had eaten into him. Didn't these gilded popinjays realize that while they dawdled about, good men were dying out there in the field? But urgency never touched them. They were not even really interested. He knew he had failed miserably. He hoped he had not hurt any chances Johnny might have. Forlorn hope. It was all up to Johnny now. But what could the poor lad possibly do?